Over the past year, much has been said and written about the First World War, a conflict which affected millions of lives across the globe. But still I'm wondering, how much do we really know about how ordinary people experienced this first truly global war? I'm Ingrid Sharp, and as a historian at the University of Leeds in Northern England, I'm interested in understanding not just what happened during the war, but what it felt like for those who were caught up in it. No eyewitnesses able to share any meaningful memories are alive today, but what we do have are their voices, captured in diaries, letters, and memoirs. In this programme, The Great War Diaries from the BBC World Service, you'll be hearing people from Britain, Germany, France and Russia, telling their stories from a very personal perspective. Stories of individual courage, love and loss, hope and grief. Their voices reach across the gap of time and place and give a human dimension to a conflict that's otherwise simply too overwhelming to grasp. When Archduke Franz Ferdinand and his wife Sophie were shot dead in Sarajevo by Serbian nationalists on June the 28th, 1914, few imagined that this would be the catalyst that would plunge the world into a global conflict. A conflict that would last over 4 years and claim the lives of nearly 20 million soldiers and civilians.
On a certain radiant morning, 7 weeks ago, we learned that a man and woman had been murdered in a distant country. We felt deeply for the great family who had known many tragedies. But the murder of the Grand Duke and Duchess of Austria in the town of Sarajevo had nothing to do with us. So we thought. We were wrong.
Across Europe, people were getting ready to join a conflict that would take them far beyond anything they'd known before. Among them, a 49-year-old British woman who had already experienced two wars as a volunteer nurse.
War had been declared. The thing which we had talked of for years had happened. Germany stood revealed as England's old and implacable enemy. I, Sarah McNaughton, am Scottish. I'm proud of it. I was born in 1864 into a wealthy family. To me, it has always been important to use my wealth to alleviate the sufferings of others and to do good. As a Red Cross volunteer, I have lived through the wars in South Africa and the Balkans. So it is only natural that I should report for duty as an auxiliary nurse at the front in Belgium. Travelling with me is a group of inexperienced young women who also want to assist the British Army in the most brutal conflict it has ever faced.
My, I'm terribly excited. They're going to take care of all these men. Bandage, wash...
Most importantly, we must smile. All of you must maintain your smile. I call it the patent patriotic smile. You must learn to carry it in all situations. It will keep up the men's courage. We were not ready. We did not pretend to be ready, but we meant to fight whether we were ready or not.
Papa! Papa!
Thousands of miles away, in the south of Russia, a young Cossack girl heard the first rumblings of war.
On this day in August, I was looking for my father out in the fields.
Papa!
The bells had been ringing for hours. When it is not a feast day, the bells chime only when there is a fire or something really bad has happened.
Papa! Papa!
Marina.
My father was a colonel of the Kuban Cossacks, a proud, hard man. On this day, he hugged and kissed me without a word. He had never done so before.
Russia was mobilizing against Austria-Hungary in support of its ally Serbia, but it was facing serious internal problems too.
I am Marina Yurlova, and I'm 14 years old. I live in the south of our mighty Russian Empire in a small village by the river Kuban. As the daughter of a Cossack colonel, I am always ready for adventure. We Cossacks are feared warriors. Because of this, we form the Tsar's personal bodyguards. Ordained by God, he rules over all Russians. Nicholas II seems to me to be a very sad Tsar. Again and again, he has had to endure horrible news. He has lost wars and even faced revolutions. Now, all of Russia seems to be losing its mind. We Cossacks are the only ones he can always rely on. And he does. Our Cossacks were getting their horses ready to board the train. I remembered an old war tradition which my father had told me about. The women follow the Cossacks as they go to war and stay as close as possible to the army. Why should it be any different this time?
Determined to follow her father into war, Marina stood on the railway tracks and managed to stop a train carrying troops to the front.
Stoy! Stoy! Можно мне с вами?
Если ты этого хочешь.
War, sang the iron wheels. War, war. A monotonous, contented song. We passed many trains, all filled with men, marching towards victory, or so we thought.
Elsewhere, young people were equally keen to join up. Many of them thought the war would be over very quickly, and they didn't want to miss it. In Germany, 18-year-old Peter Kollwitz was desperate to volunteer, but first he needed to persuade his parents to sign the forms giving him permission.
Das unterschreiben wir dir nie.
Ich muss an die Front. Hört auf, mich wie ein Kind zu behandeln.
Du bist unser Kind.
I am Peter Kollwitz, mother, wife, social democrat, and above all, artist. It is the suffering of the working class that drives me. I must draw it, must show it to the world. We, on the other hand, are doing very well. I'm called Germany's most important female artist. Karl is a successful doctor, and we live with our son Peter in Berlin. Where else? Here, for all its modernity, power is still in the hands of the arch-conservative Prussian nobility. And above all, in the hands of the heel-clicking military that keeps them there. At its head is Emperor Wilhelm II, a ruler who seems unable to distinguish fantasy from reality. Since the day I was born, Germany has won all the wars it fought. We have forged a mighty empire through these victories, but with it, fear, even hatred from our neighbors. We feel, in fact, surrounded by enemies.
Es geht nicht um Vernunft, es geht um Taten. Endlich!
Peter was determined to be part of a war that he was convinced would usher in a new and better Germany. He was deaf to his mother's pleas that his country needed him alive to build its future.
Ist das Wirt aus dem Vaterland in 20 Jahren, wenn ihr alle tot seid?
Everyone he knew was volunteering, and he simply couldn't bear to be left behind.
A feeling of pressure and inconsolability. Of the impossibility of sacrificing Peter.
Young Peter Kollwitz was eager to fight for Germany. But when the German army invaded neutral Belgium, many men, young and old, in other countries were outraged. In Britain, men of all ages rushed to defend the small nation against the hated enemy, often called the Huns.
Charles Edward Montagu, mountaineer, swimmer, sporting fit. 41 years old, sir.
Do you have a family?
A wife and 7 children, sir.
And are things so bad at home that this will be your gift to your wife?
Sir.
I am Charles Edward Montagu, and at 48 years old, getting on a bit. When I was a young man, I went up to Oxford, where I became an ardent pacifist. Today, I live in London, the capital city of the greatest empire the world has ever known. At the moment, I'm working as a journalist for the Manchester Guardian. But since the German attack on Belgium, I am a pacifist no longer. This injustice, this barbaric act of violence against a defenseless people must be stopped. And who can stop the Germans if not us? I've decided to volunteer for the army. Even though I am some years over the age limit of 42.
I just wanted to fight, like the rest of the country. I felt an appetite for danger. And after all these years sitting behind a desk, a passion for any fresh enterprise. In a word, for more life.
Back in Berlin, even the Social Democrat Käthe Kollwitz was beginning to be caught up in the nationalist fervor.
War. And within me, the feeling. We've endured long enough the pressure, the embrace of the enemy. Now we are attacked and must defend ourselves. It is as though we are awakened from an oppressive dream.
Zu viele Kriegsfreiwillige. Kann es von uns denn zu viele geben?
Peter and the others went to the barracks early for a medical examination. They returned at 6 o'clock. They'd all been turned down. Hope that we might be able to keep him at home.
Yeah? But then the news came that another Berlin regiment still had places. And despite her husband's objections and her own misgivings, Käthe felt she had to tell her son.
In Europin ist auch Platz.
Käthe, bitte!
I must say something about my altered attitude towards the war. For the first time, I felt the absolute togetherness of the people. I felt I was beginning anew, as though none of the old values were left.
In an army hospital in Antwerp in Belgium, nurse Sarah McNaughton was right at the front line of war.
All my previous ideas of men marching to war had a touch of heroism, crudely expressed by quick step and smart uniforms. Today I see men so broken that their own mothers would hardly recognize them. And the uniforms are stiff with blood and have to be cut off them.
In Berlin, Peter Kollwitz believed in a German victory. Elated at being allowed to go, he told his mother that he would be home in only a few weeks.
Du wirst sehen. In ein paar Wochen bin ich wieder daheim.
We kiss goodbye. He thanks me. I thank him.
Ich grüße Paris von dir.
Suddenly I sense something. My son will die.
In Sedan, a French town near the border with German-occupied Belgium, a 10-year-old schoolboy was excited about the prospect of a war against the hated Boche, the Germans. Fighting had already begun close to his home, and he was sure that France would win.
Papa has told us that war has been declared between France and Germany. 3 regiments have already left for the border. The soldiers are very happy. We can hear the cannons from here. I am Yves Congar. My father is too old now to go off with our regiments and fight the Boche. Both he and Grandpa remember only too well our last war, the catastrophe of 1870-71. To our shame, it was here. It was our city where we lost the decisive battle against Germany. And after our defeat, we had to hand over Alsace and Lorraine, two of our richest provinces, to Germany. The whole nation is ashamed. We will never be able to live in peace with such bloodthirsty neighbors. Everyone knows that. But we had to be clever. We need allies to take on this monster. Russia and even England, our old enemy. Together, united, we will defeat the Germans.
Voilà un brigue avec lâché bombe sur les Boches.
Thank you.
the Eastern Front, the battle has been raging for days. If you are quiet and pay close attention, you can feel the ground shake softly. It is an ominous feeling.
In a small German town, very near the Russian border, a schoolgirl's life was about to be turned upside down by the war.
My name is Elfriede Kur, and I'm just a girl, worse luck. Even worse, I'm only 12 years old. If only I was older and a man, I could fight. But here I am, stuck in this backwater with grandmother, who looks after me. We live in Schneidermühl in the province of Posen, where our great German Empire borders Russia. And here, nothing ever happens at all. But now we are at war and the Russians are advancing. So like almost all girls in my class, I have begun to write a war diary. This is to capture this glorious time, as our teacher puts it.
Wie heißt es doch so schön im deutschen Dichterwort? Viel Feind, viel Ehr.
At school, the teachers have told us it is a duty towards our fatherland not to use foreign words. At first I didn't know what they meant by that.
Beginnen wir mit dem Französischen. Eine Sprache, die sich wie ein Krebsgeschwür...
Now I understand. You shouldn't use the word adieu. It's French.
Now and then, artillery fire, some German snipers.
Good morning, sir.
Charles Edward Montagu had become a sergeant in the Royal Fusiliers. Now he was fighting at Thien, on the Franco-Belgian border.
But mainly we have been waiting. One can hardly imagine the ubiquitous muckiness, mud and stench of the whole front. That is the real enemy. I have had a little dose of trench fever, but it isn't getting any better. Rather worse in these conditions. Should I really have insisted on serving in the trenches? The one thing of which no description given in England has given any true measure is the universal misery of it all. After the heavy losses of the first battles, our soldiers invented out of pure instinct of self-preservation a new kind of warfare, the trench. The devastating effects of shells and bullets are only survivable underground. But still the Germans are advancing. We are able to hold them back here in the very last corner of Belgium, but I fear that further south in France, the situation daily grows more and more ominous.
More ominous too for Yves Congar and his family in Sedan. The German occupiers had arrived.
Tuesday, terrible Tuesday. They are here. The barbarians are walking past our windows. I hear a soldier bark out an order. The Germans are at Monsieur Benoit's front door. They make sure that no soldiers are hiding there. They shot his dog to stop his barking from alerting the French about the German patrols. I'm sure I will never experience anything so horrible for the rest of my life.
In Antwerp, in Belgium too, the war was getting closer to nurse Sarah McNaughton's frontline hospital.
100 beds filled with men in pain. Give one something to think about. And it's during pain that these attitudes of suffering strike one most. Some of them bury their heads in their pillows, like shot partridges seek to bury theirs in autumn leaves. The guns never cease.
The roads are lined and filled with people walking or in carts and carriages, all trying to get away. These poor people are doomed to leave behind everything that only a few weeks ago seemed so permanent. Now their whole world lies scattered in ruins. One hears this is not just in Belgium, but all over Europe. The continent has not faced such horrors for more than 100 years.
Charles Edward Montagu's time in the trenches was coming to a premature end.
Bronchitis, temperature of 103, measles rash. Let that be enough, Montagu.
I can't dispute the justice of it. I begin to feel an old crock. Out of place among the boys.
Gott, der Herr hat unseren tapferen Soldaten die Hand geführt und ihre Waffen gesegnet.
The Kaiser has ordered that after so many victories, school is to be cancelled.
For Germany, early in the war, things were going well on the Eastern Front. In what became known as the Battle of Tannenberg, the Germans inflicted a devastating defeat on the Russian army.
Tannenberg, what a victory! Not only in school, throughout the city euphoria prevails. The Russians are defeated. We have taken over 60,000 prisoners. The Russians flee and are forced back into the lakes and swamps, where they must surely perish miserably.
Also, meine Herren, dann wünsche ich guten Appetit.
We are lucky to still be alive. The town is filled with Germans. Captain Nemnik, a German officer, is living with us.
In Sedan, 10-year-old Yves Congar had no intention of making friends with the German occupiers billeted under the family roof.
In history class, I read, the Huns came to France and burnt everything that stood in their way. How is it possible that after 1400 years, we have such a barbaric and destructive race once again in Europe?
Peter's birthday. Antwerp has fallen, and the sky is once again blue.
Das ist ein Zeichen.
Back in Berlin, Käthe Kollwitz celebrated the German victories for the sake of her son, who was now at the front.
For the first time in our lives, today on October 10th, we, dedicated social democrats, we are hanging out the Kaiser's black, white and red flag from the boys' room for both Peter and Antwerp. Above all, though, for Peter.
Käthe Kollwitz wasn't thinking of the suffering of those caught up in the Battle of Antwerp. I'm Ingrid Sharp, and after the news here on the BBC World Service, join me again to hear what it was like in the thick of that battle, and how those who wrote the Great War Diaries fared as the realities of this terrible conflict began to sink in.
Weekends on the BBC World Service.
I'm Rodrigo Pinto, and this month on Global Beats, we are in one of the most musically rich cities in Europe, Portugal's capital, Lisbon.
Já fiz uma viagem longe, longe
with the traditional and dramatic Fado.
Da margem esquerda da vida, parte uma ponte.
And the more contemporary African-inspired sound of Kuduro. There are musical influences from around Portugal and the world. Meet some of the country's most innovative and diverse artists. Global Beats from Lisbon. Online at bbcworldservice.com.
I am not afraid to die. My ears are about to burst.
I'm Ingrid Sharp. And after the news from the BBC World Service, I'll be bringing you more from those who lived through that huge conflict 100 years ago, World War I.
I ask you, God, do you really resurrect every dead Englishman, Frenchman, and of course German?
Join me again in 2 minutes for the Great War Diaries.
BBC News with Neil Nunes. Pope Francis has condemned what he called the brutal religious persecution in the Middle East and has called for peace around the world. In his annual Christmas address, he said that truly there were so many tears this Christmas. Saudi Arabia has revealed the full extent of its projected financial deficit as a result of the plunging price of oil, its dominant export. Next year's budget shortfall will be more than $38 billion, the first deficit for 3 years and the largest in Saudi history, but government spending will not be reduced. The capital of Sierra Leone is reported to be very quiet as a ban on public gatherings take effect as part of a surge of activity by health officials to stem the Ebola epidemic in and around the city. A spokesman for the Somali Islamist militant group Al-Shabaab says its fighters have attacked the main African Union military base close to Mogadishu Airport. Reports say explosions and gunfire have been heard from the compound. The authorities in Wenzhou City in southeastern China have banned schools from holding Christmas-related events. The schools have been told to focus their attention on China's traditional festivals. A Muslim man has been sentenced to death for apostasy in Mauritania, the first such sentence to be imposed since the country became independent in 1960. Mohammed Sheikh Old Mohammed was found to have written an internet article that insulted the Prophet Muhammad. Reports from Yemen say the country's second highest intelligence official has been abducted by Shiite Houthi rebels from his house in the capital Sana'a. The whereabouts of Major General Yahya al-Marani are unknown. People in Britain receiving one of the most popular gifts this Christmas, a drone, have been warned by the Civil Aviation Authority to fly them carefully or face prosecution following several near misses with commercial aircraft. BBC World News.
The First World War was less than 3 months old when in October 1914, the city of Antwerp in Belgium fell to the German army. I'm Ingrid Sharp, and back to bring you more of the Great War Diaries from the BBC World Service, the stories of ordinary people involved in that conflict on both sides. Through their own writings, we'll be hearing about their hopes and fears, joys and pains, the human experiences not normally found in the history books. In Antwerp, Scottish nurse Sarah McNaughton and her colleagues experienced the terrifying side of that German victory.
They should have been back hours ago to pick us up.
It looks like they have forgotten us, my dear.
But the severe cases are still here. And us.
Here we found the wounded all yelling like mad things, thinking they were going to be left behind. We shan't be able to leave now. Let us take all the wounded down to the coke cellar. We sat in the cellar with one nightlight burning and with 70 wounded men to take care of. Two of them were dying. There was only one line of bricks between us and the shells. Now they came over at a rate of 4 a minute. I found myself wishing that for me, a shot would come and finish the horrible thing.
The Germans had captured Antwerp and were trying to push on through northern France. But fighting was fierce and casualties were high on both sides. And then, at the end of October, Kieter Kollwitz in Berlin received a letter from Peter's regiment.
Vielleicht ist er verwundet. Vielleicht kann er nicht schreiben.
It was the worst possible news. Peter had died 8 days earlier.
Everywhere lay destruction and death. After a mere 3 months of this terrible war, 1 million men have fallen.
The great offensive was to be launched soon. No more laughter or singing. Thousands upon thousands of us were there, just waiting to be killed.
2 years on, Cossack soldier Marina Yurlova, still only 16, had already won the Cross of St. George for her bravery. At the front in the Caucasus, she helped her comrades write their final letters home.
Annushka, дорогая.
These letters made a strange impression on me. Here I was, writing to other men's wives about the children, the crops, the cows, or other a pregnant ewe, and almost invariably ending with, "If God please to kill me, pray for my soul."
Если Богу будет угодно, чтобы я погиб.
This summer, we are planning a decisive offensive against our arch enemy, the Turks. The Ottoman Empire would have collapsed long ago under our powerful attacks, if the Germans had not always helped their allies. They send their best generals and their most advanced weapons to the front.
The Russian troops were poorly equipped. Marina was lucky to have a gas mask.
The German guns began to fire. The air was filled with the bursting of gas shells. While we tried to cross this valley that lay between us and the enemy like an open grave. Dawn made a vile twilight among the heavy clouds of gas through which we moved like ghosts, with round black windows for eyes and white spots for faces. My mask seemed to put a screen between me and the world outside, a world through which I moved unhurt, watching the carnage around me with an almost complete indifference.
Charles Edward Montague, too old for frontline duty, had been transferred to the Propaganda and Press Censorship Department. Now based near the River Somme in France, he had to deal with visiting politicians, such as a member of parliament named Coleridge, who was keen to see the war for himself.
Your assignment will be to lead Mr. Coleridge here straight to the front to see our men.
A tour, so to speak, of the reality of the war.
You're not the truest of realities, Montague. I believe we understand each other. And in the end, I shall hold you personally responsible for the safety of our honourable Member of Parliament.
I'm certain you'll find quite the thrilling spot for us.
As you wish, sir.
Listen, Montague, I have a feeling this is somehow staged.
I think you may be right, sir.
Show me what life is really like out here. The front. After all, that's what I was promised.
I feel a kind of grudge against the mere sightseer who comes out to see the war as a sort of show.
Come now, sir. We mustn't miss our men's great offensive.
Is this in any way safe?
Well, let's find out.
Come along, sir.
Are you trying to get us killed?
Sometimes I think it would be a fine thing to be killed in this war.
Near the eastern border of the German Empire, Elfriede Kur, now 15, was seeing big changes in her neighborhood.
Before the war, my hometown of Schneidemühl used to be such a dull place to live. But now it has become an important center for our arms industry. Ever since 1915, young officers have trained to be pilots in the flyer replacement unit right next to our school. The pilots are all young and very dashing. We all harbor a secret passion for them.
And it wasn't long before Elfriede caught the eye of one of these young pilots, Lieutenant Werner Waldecker.
Ich bin Werner Waldecker und ich bin aus Bielefeld.
Und ein echter Leutnant.
So many men everywhere. It has never been easier to get boyfriends. Even when you're only a 15-year-old schoolgirl. Many of my classmates have a soldier friend already. So after lessons, we secretly meet up for love fests. Although, of course, in reality, it is all about kissing. But now I have a real date, too. How exciting.
Wissen Sie, dass ich jetzt auch zu den großen Mädchen gehöre?
Weil Sie einen Windbeutel essen?
Like all fighter pilots, Werner Waldecker knew only too well that he could be dead within a few weeks. So, he told Elfriede, he wanted to enjoy life while he could.
Also versuchen wir das Leben zu genießen.
Who could die so readily? He should taste what life has to offer. And besides, he has blue eyes and soft blonde hair. And he also talked about his mother.
It wasn't just pilots who were risking their lives, of course. For the infantrymen on the Western Front, life was even tougher.
I was on my way through the no man's land. I had to stop. Where was the English line? Where was the German? I was lost and had no idea what to do. My name is Ernst Jünger, and I'm 21 years old. I volunteered for military service. It wasn't so much that I was inspired by the nationalist hysteria, but more that I simply wanted to escape the school that I hated so much. I liked this war, in a strange kind of way. I was sent to the front in France as a simple soldier. Today, I'm a lieutenant, a Prussian officer. I'd call that career progress, even if it's mainly the result of our high attrition rate. Nobody dies faster than the young lieutenants who lead their men into battle or defend the trenches against enemy attack.
The ground is shaking. The sky is like a witch's cauldron. There are hundreds of heavy batteries. Countless shells crisscross above us. My ears are about to burst! I am not afraid to die, but if I have to die, then at least let it be in a fight, man to man, not like an insect accidentally stepped on by a boot.
Back in Schneidermühl, Elfriede Kur was too shy to show her feelings for the young Lieutenant Waldecker.
Ob ich es vielleicht mal ganz offen sehen kann?
Auf Wiedersehen!
Of course, I could quite gladly have let Lieutenant Waldecker kiss me. Very gladly. I was such a silly goose.
Back on the Somme, Charles Montague's reckless behavior in exposing the visiting Member of Parliament to the real dangers of war had got him into trouble with his superior officer.
What exactly were you thinking during this mission, Montague? I could have you court-martialed.
Surely one goes to the theatre to see the play, not to enjoy the intervals between the acts.
But not within reach of enemy guns!
Last week, I read in a respectable London newspaper...
I could have been killed!
...that the British people as a whole would give their lives to secure a victory.
Pull yourself together.
Mr. Collingridge, sir, you are living proof of it. I'm honoured to have met you.
Meanwhile, at Schneidermühl, Elfriede Kur, waiting at the café for Werner Waldecker, was about to receive terrible news.
Werner Waldecker ist abgestürzt.
Tot?
Ja, tot.
Werner had crashed during a training flight. He was dead.
I pictured his face, his bright eyes, his cheeky laugh, blonde strands of hair under his slanted cap. It's all been shattered, burst apart, blood smeared, his skull in pieces.
She'd been planning to let him kiss her this time. Now he never would.
I ask you, God, do you really resurrect every dead soldier so that they are not lost? Every dead Englishman, Frenchman, Russian Zouave, Turk, and of course German?
The list of our losses have come in.
At Amiens in France, the latest British offensive was going devastatingly badly.
It won't be easy to explain this defeat to the readers back at home. Well, you are a journalist, Montague. There cannot and simply will not be a defeat. Understood?
A journalist informs the public, sir. He does not lie to his readers.
Well, then it's time you became a war correspondent. The truth. Should we all just give up and go home? Try to be reasonable, Montague. Moreover, General Headquarters is still firmly convinced that victory is imminent.
On the very first day, the offensive has already cost the lives of 20,000 of our men. Nevertheless, there has not been any breakthrough of the German lines at any point. The number of dead and injured is so high that we no longer allow the lists of our losses to be published. And the death continues, day after day.
1917 was nearly at an end. In Russia, Marina Yurlova had been caught up in the mighty upheaval of the Russian Revolution. The Tsar had been forced to abdicate, and the revolutionaries now controlled Russia. As a supporter of the Tsar, she found herself on the wrong side and locked up.
Je to tvoj nomer, kozákskaja svíňa.
I never thought that I would celebrate my 18th birthday in prison. But for the new Russian government, I am now an enemy of the people. The Tsar, sacred to us Cossacks for centuries, is overthrown. The new rulers are the revolutionary Bolsheviks. Promising to end the war immediately, the Bolsheviks have abolished the old order. With the help of the masses, they plan to build an entirely new form of society. Communism. Everyone who stands in their way faces their revolutionary terror.
One by one, prisoners were taken out of their cells and shot. Marina prayed desperately to be spared.
52, 52, 53, Jiva, Jiva!
With Russia now out of the war, Ernst Jünger saw a chance for a German victory.
Today, the 21st of March 1918, we begin our great offensive against the Allies. Following the Russian Revolution and the collapse of Russia, we have been able to transfer a million of our soldiers from the Eastern to the Western Front. For the first time in 4 years, we outnumber and outgun their defenses. With America now in the war, this attack is our last chance to make a decisive breakthrough before they are able to muster their full strength. Fueled by a mixture of excitement, bloodthirstiness, rage, and alcohol, we attack the enemy lines. I felt the overwhelming urge to destroy.
No! 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 Dégagez, sale boxe!
In the occupied town of Sedan in France, German soldiers, the hated Boche, were plundering family homes, taking everything from clothes to mattresses for the German army. Yves Congar, now 14, and his family were not spared.
The Boche's conduct in France has been shameful. It is unbelievable how much plunder they are taking back to Germany. They'll have enough to completely rebuild every one of their towns. But soon we'll get over there, and it will be the one stealing, setting fire and pillaging.
Beowulf, lassen Sie auch noch die Matratze mitnehmen.
Like so many of our neighbors, a few months ago my father was rounded up by the occupiers and transported to a labor camp in Germany. There they are forced to work in the munitions factories. I've heard that the Germans are planning a new offensive. There have never been so many of their soldiers staying with us. They are everywhere.
Elsewhere in France, Charles Edward Montagu, now a lieutenant, had been promoted to chief censor for British military intelligence. In March 1918, the British forces were being pushed back by the reinforced German army.
I am based at the elegant but otherwise utterly boring headquarters at Chateau Roland-Court. A desk job is all very well, but despite my 52 years, I would far rather be in the trenches, fighting as a real soldier. As befits high command, the chateau is located well behind our front line, safely out of harm's way, at least until today. A major German offensive was launched, which caught us completely by surprise. Our defenses have been breached. Our troops are fleeing.
The enemy is at the gates. 15 minutes to pack up and leave.
Sir, with all due respect, would now not be the time for me to resume active service?
You're an old man.
Oh, if you really must.
Stay for a couple of hours and ensure that all the documents are duly destroyed.
With pleasure, sir.
Sir, we really should be leaving now.
Don't stay too long. And don't let the Germans snap you up, old boy. Now, off.
Merry old England, was, Priebke?
Capturing abandoned British trenches as they advanced, the hungry German troops were amazed at what they found.
There were entire boxes filled with eggs, onions, tomatoes, coffee, delicious sauces, jams, in short, everything a gourmet could dream of.
While Ernst Jünger and his men were finally able to eat their fill, in Germany itself, the Allied blockade had led to serious food shortages. Elfriede Kur, now volunteering at a nursery, didn't even have enough milk to feed the babies in her care.
Oh, these babies. Nothing but skin and bones. Tiny starved bodies. And their eyes are so big. When they cry, they can barely make a sound. 7-month-old Gerd suddenly twists his whole body. His arms shake. He craned his neck and suddenly lay still and stiff in my arms.
Wie konnten Sie?
Little Gerdchen's mother screamed that it was the nursery that was responsible for the death of her child. That wasn't true. He was just another victim of the war.
By the summer of 1918, it was clear that the German offensive had failed. American troops had joined the Allies, and Ernst Jünger's men had lost all faith in a German victory. On the 16th of August 1918, they found themselves under severe attack.
Gas, gas, gas!
Morale of my squad is pretty low, I have to say. Our great offensive faltered, and now the British and American counterattacks never cease. Pretty much everyone has given up any hope of a German victory.
Angriff! Erste Männer!
I turned around and saw a strange sight.
Angriff!
Men were coming up from behind me with their hands up. They were moving towards the enemy lines, their hands held high.
Gentlemen, as promised, here's your opportunity to photograph some German prisoners.
Hands up, Fritz.
These Germans seem like frightened rabbits, gathering up their courage just to peer out of their burrows. We have now the most stirring opportunity to show greatness in victory.
Come on. One more for the Kaiser. Hey, Montague, where did you get these guys? I mean, these are hardly the terrible Huns my readers are keen to see. You got anything else?
A few weeks ago, you'd have been running away from this lot. Believe me.
But there appears to be hard pressure on the side of showing littleness, and so poisoning the future of the world.
After 4 long years, the war was coming to an end. For some, it meant devastation. For others, relief. Marina Yurlova was released from her prison cell by an officer of the anti-communist White Guard.
Капитан Григорьев на службе его превосходительства адмирала Колчака.
She was the only person left alive in the entire prison.
Germany is near the end. Wildly contradictory feelings. Germany is losing the war.
Back in Berlin, Kita Kollwitz was still grieving for her son Peter and for all the young men lost in what she now saw as a pointless war. She wanted nothing but an end to the bloodshed.
Madness not to cut the war short if the game is up. Not to save what still may be saved. The young men who are still alive, Germany must keep. Otherwise, the country will be absolutely impoverished. Therefore, not another day of war. When it is clear that the war is lost.
Dritte Kompanie! Hey!
Ernst Jünger watched as his entire company either surrendered or died. Finally, even the stalwart Priebke abandoned hope. With a patriotic song on his lips, he deliberately walked out into the deadly enemy fire. Sixteen-year-old Elfriede Kur had lost all hope too, and tried to take her own life in the final weeks of the war. Heartbroken over the deaths of Werner and baby Gerhard, she offered up her own life as a sacrifice so that God would intervene and stop the carnage. But she woke up to a world still at war, with her distraught grandmother by her bedside.
Ich habe gedacht, ich bin in einer anderen Welt.
Nein, Elfriede, du bist hier.
I crawled close to her and rested my head on her chest and cried. Grandma pressed her head onto mine and cried as well. We cried and cried, and neither of us asking the other way we felt so miserable.
For Yves Congar, the German officer still billeted at his home no longer held any terror.
Deutschland kaputt, Herr Major.
They both knew that Germany and her allies had lost a war that left nearly 10 million soldiers dead and more than 20 million wounded. On the 4th of November 1918, Yves, still only 14 years old, wrote in his diary a wish that was doubtless shared by millions of survivors on both sides.
I shall soon finish my war diary. It will be the last war diary that I write in my life. For there must never be another war. Never again.
A week later, on November the 11th, 1918, the guns finally fell silent. And people in all nations tried to make sense of what had happened and rebuild what they, like Yves Congar, hoped would be a world without war. Yet, just over 20 years later, a new and even more terrible global conflict was to break out that would shatter these dreams of peace and destroy countless more lives. I'm Ingrid Sharp, and you've been listening to the Great War Diaries from the BBC World Service. My producer was Christina Pommett, and this programme was brought to you by CTVC.